In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police, who investigate crime, and the Crown prosecutors, who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Law and Order UK. Night, a guy sits on a couch playing on his Xbox.
Yes. Come on.
Billy.
I can hardly hear it.
Gotta be up at six.
If I turn it down anymore, I might as well turn it off.
There's an idea.
Okay.
Billy.
Billy opens his flat door and sees a woman spread-eagled outside. He looks up the stairwell to another landing.
Shit. Billy. What is it?
So, you say you weren't on your own?
No, my girlfriend was there too. She was with me the whole time. So.
Right. And you only heard a woman's voice, yeah?
My Xbox was pretty loud. I only turned it down after she screamed.
All right. Well, thanks for your help. One of our uniform. I'll get some more.
Mrs. Golovsky owns the building.
Ah, Mrs. Golovsky. Hello, I'm Detective Sergeant Brooks. Did you hear anything?
Sorry.
Just trying to find out if you heard anything at all.
Oh, no, nothing at all.
And what about the girl who fell? Did she have a husband or boyfriend?
No, I never saw her with anyone. As a matter of fact, I used to think maybe she was the other way inclined.
Victim's just gone into surgery, so we're not going to be able to speak to her for a while.
All right. Do you have a spare key for Stephanie's flat?
Oh, yes, in the key cupboard.
Right, well, we're going to need to have a look around. And do you need a key to get into the building?
Yes, but you can use the buzzer.
Right.
My nephew put in a new lock in April. He's very technical, Miss Allen.
Right, OK. Well, if you could just fetch that key for us, that would be great, and Anne will look after you. OK, thank you. Right. We got three old dears that were fast asleep, and the bloke who found Stephanie said he was out in the flat as soon as he heard her fall, but didn't see or hear anyone else. So the thing is, who did it, and how did they get out?
London beneath misty skies. The River Thames snakes through the city. Bradley Walsh as haggard-looking DS Ronnie Brooks. Jamie Bamber as chisel-jawed DS Matt Devlin. Harriet Walter as dark-haired, strong-faced DI Natalie Chandler. Ben Daniels as sharp-featured senior Crown Prosecutor James Steele. Freema Agyeman as attractive Crown Prosecutor Alicia Phillips. And Bill Patterson as keen-eyed Director of the CPS, George Castle. Law and Order UK. Anonymous. Teleplay by Debbie O'Malley. Matt's with Mrs. Golovsky looking at photos on Stephanie's hall wall.
You won't make a mess, will you? She likes to keep everything looking nice.
Was this her?
Oh, yes. She can look really lovely when she makes an effort.
Do you know what she does for a living?
She's a nurse on the children's ward at Alderman's Hospital.
Ah, OK. Well, thanks for your help, Mrs. Golovsky. We really appreciate it. But if you leave it to us now, and we'll drop the key in when we're done. Is that OK?
Oh, all right.
Thank you.
Ronnie?
Yeah.
Look at this. Old file of emails, all addressed to Stephanie, starting in the beginning of last year, and signed by Giovanni.
Ronnie studies them.
I get the impression he was typing one-handed.
They've tried tracking him, blocking him, you name it.
Emails just keep coming.
I take it she changed her email address.
Half a dozen times, made no difference.
She's kept hard copies of everything. I guess she didn't want this stuff clogging up her inbox.
I want to see you in that little pink cami set tonight. I'll know you're thinking of me when you stretch out on your new IKEA mattress. And I want you to strip up. Oh, I want to wash my hands.
Oh, we found these little pink pyjama things under her pillow, and she had bought a mattress from IKEA when she moved into a new flat.
Yeah, he knows what kind of toothpaste she uses.
Thanks,
soap,
John.
Furniture polish, everything.
And he's thought of new uses for most of them.
Any word from the hospital?
They're keeping it under sedation until the swelling on her brain goes down.
Don't suppose there's any direct threats in here, like I'm coming over to push you down the stairs?
No.
I want to know who this pervert is.
Did she report these to anyone?
Yeah, to a DS Fraser at North Cross CSU.
North Cross CSU.
Someone reports a stalker. We don't just tell them not to worry, but we have to prioritise according to threat level. And this guy's clever. He uses multiple email addresses and routes them through anonymous remailers. They're pretty much impossible to track.
So when did these start with the threatening phone calls?
About 6 months ago. Stephanie was already freaked out by the emails. They put her on the day shift at work so she wouldn't have to be out at night. But she was convinced he was getting into her flat when she wasn't there. That's why she moved. That's when he told her to stop trying to avoid him or he'd kill her. He said he'd go down to the hospital and take out as many people as he could.
When was this?
2 weeks ago. That's when we upgraded her threat level.
Well, still no leads?
Only one. A few days ago, Stephanie got a call from Ashbridge Prison. They said a prisoner had asked to have her mobile added to his list of allowed numbers, but Stephanie had never heard of him, and she'd only had that mobile a couple of weeks.
Legal visits room, Ashbridge Prison.
I made a mistake. It's easily done. I put a 3 instead of a 5.
Thing is, Mr. Morgan, you gave Stephanie's name as well as her mobile number.
There's a lot of Stephanies in the world.
But only one of them got pushed down the stairs last night.
Yeah. Well, I've got one hell of an alibi.
So you didn't do it yourself, it doesn't mean you weren't involved, and it's not going to look too pretty in front of the old parole board, is it?
Look, you're pissing up the wrong tree. A bloke called Larry asked me to request a number. Said he was running low on phone credits and there was some bird he wanted to hook up with.
That's very community spirited of you.
He made it worth my while.
Where is this Lowry now?
Got out last week. We done.
Outside a flat.
Excuse me, I'm DS Matt Devlin. Do you know the guy who lives here? Russell Lowry.
Yeah, I know him.
Do you know where we could find him?
Usually starts off at the Lord Palmerston. Keeps going until he finds a girl who's either drunk or dumb enough.
Not a fan.
Seemed all right at first, offered me a cheap deal on his laptop. Invited me in to take a look. Next thing I know, he's got his hand up my skirt.
They watch the blonde go.
And they say romance is dead.
In an interview room.
I believe that when you feel a connection with a woman, you owe it to yourself to follow it up.
OK, Mr. Lowry. What about Stephanie Blake?
We met in a bar. And we clicked.
When was this?
It was about a month ago. There's a place in town, in Soho. She gave me her number, and I was interested in exploring the possibility.
So why then didn't you just call her?
Well, I had a little local difficulty.
Ronnie checks records.
Remanded for assault in Ashbridge Prison.
Yeah. It was an unfortunate misunderstanding. Well, the judge agreed it didn't merit a custodial sentence.
Why mess around getting Shane Morgan to request her number?
Well, Shane was low on smokes but didn't need his phone credits, and I had cigarettes and a lot of calls to make, so works out well for the both of us, really.
Not strictly within the rules, though.
No. But it was a victimless crime.
Ronnie's eyes narrow.
Do you have a job, Russell?
Between careers right now. I was up north for a while. I've only recently relocated to London.
Did you contact Stephanie Blake when you got out?
I'm afraid it was a case of out of sight, out of mind. Another possibility arose. What can I say? I like to spread the love. Life's short, you know.
See? It's in the email.
I like to spread the love, and that's not all I like to spread.
Alicia reads the emails.
Is this all you've got? No forensics, nothing to link him to the scene?
They found nothing on the stairs, no fingerprints, no trace evidence, and the only DNA on the chain was from the victim.
Yeah, but we know Lowry tried to contact Stephanie from prison whilst hiding his identity, and he recently sold his laptop on eBay. We just need a reason to hold on to him while we track down the buyer.
Lowry's neighbour, the one that he groped, do you think she might want to report sexual assault?
Well, she seemed pretty keen to see the back of him.
Talk to her. If nothing else, it might buy you some time.
Dear Chandler. Oh, thank you. Stephanie Blake has regained consciousness.
Do you recognise this man?
No.
Stephanie is sitting up in a hospital bed.
You think he's Giovanni?
He says he met you in a bar in Soho a couple of months ago.
I don't go to bars.
So this isn't the man that attacked you?
I don't know. I never saw his face. He grabbed me from behind and I tried to turn around, but he was too strong.
Oh, darling.
It's okay.
Why don't you take us through what happened, Stephanie?
I went out to take my rubbish down to the basement and he grabbed hold of me at the top of the stairs.
Well, I didn't notice any rubbish on the landing.
No, sorry. It was after I'd taken the rubbish down. I was coming back up to the flat.
Did he say anything?
He said he was Giovanni. I started to scream and
He tried to choke me with the necklace I was wearing and then he threw me downstairs.
Dear God.
Has anyone stood out at all whose behaviour seemed genuinely suspicious?
The only name I ever came up with was Lucas Dutton.
And who's he?
We were living in the same block of flats when the email started.
Why him?
I'd go to the local supermarket and he'd be there too, or I'd go to the bank on the corner and he'd be queuing for the cash point right behind me. First the emails, then the phone calls. Now he tries to kill me. Please. You have to help me. You have to make him stop.
Lucas Dutton's still living in the same flats. He's got no record and he's working as a hotel porter.
I reckon Larry's still our main contender, though.
I think we've hit a brick wall there. Mr. Lowry forgot to mention that his time up north was spent in Woodbury Prison, just outside Rotherham.
And what was he in for?
Computer fraud. Right. Been hacking into people's bank accounts, helping himself.
Well, then he knew how to send emails that can't be traced.
Well, you'd imagine, but he didn't get out till last July, which means he was still banged up the time the emails started.
Maybe he got hold of one of them Wi-Fi phones. See, I do read the papers.
What, and you spend, what, half a day typing four-page email on a phone? I know prison security's lax, but I think they'd have noticed that one.
No, I wouldn't be so sure.
Matt, you want a bite?
No, you're right.
So what happened with Lowry's neighbour then?
Oh, she had him charged with sexual assault. He's banged up again in Ashbridge Prison.
Oh, good. So at least we know where he is. Well, it's down to what you get out of Mr. Dutton then, isn't it?
Home of Lucas Dutton.
Are you arresting me?
No, we're talking to you.
Well, then I don't have to answer your questions. Can you at least tell us if you know Stephanie Blake?
No comment.
Mr. Dutton, look, all we want to do is chat. Maybe if we could come in...
That'd be a breach of my human rights.
Sorry?
Article 8, European Convention of Human Rights, the right to privacy.
He knows his stuff.
He certainly does. We'll have to come back with a warrant.
You do that.
He's noticed the camera.
But maybe he's shooting some home movies.
Yeah, but who's home?
I don't think we need a warrant, do you?
Seriously, when was the last time you got a successful prosecution for online obscenity?
If someone's in a public place, there's nothing to stop you taking their picture.
You've been filming a woman in her own flat, right? The same flat that Stephanie Blake used to live in. That, my friend, is voyeurism, as outlined in Section 67 of the Sexual Offences Act 2003.
Section 67 applies only if someone has an expectation of privacy. If they deliberately leave their curtains open and walk around naked...
Come off it!
This can be interpreted as consent. If there's consent, it's not voyeurism. That's the law.
You reckon?
OK. Lucas, where were you at 1 a.m. Tuesday morning?
They can't ask me that.
If this question relates to a separate investigation, I shall require full disclosure.
Someone threw Stephanie Blake down a flight of stairs.
We know you liked following her around. I'll bet you filmed her just like you filmed the other one. And now we've got your computer, so we're going to find the emails eventually.
I don't know what they're talking about.
Sorry, gents, we're here to talk about dirty movies. You want to talk about assault? We'll have to start over. And you have to show me evidence linking my client to the victim.
Hold that thought.
Spindrift House, Mrs. Golovsky looks at Lucas's mugshot.
Weasley-looking fellow, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
You think he's the one who did it?
Well, we don't know yet.
Oh, that poor girl. At least they're letting her home. Her mother came to collect some clothes for her. I had to ask her to empty the bin in the kitchen. There was a terrible smell coming from the flat. We had rats once, some years ago. Oh, I don't want to live through that again.
No, indeed. Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Golovsky. You've been a great help. Thank you.
Thank you.
I thought Stephanie took the rubbish out.
That's what she said.
Matt ends a call.
Right, thanks. D.S. Fraser last spoke to Stephanie the day before the attack. She told her that the prison lead looked like a dead end and she didn't have the resources to trace the emails any farther. Not only that, she also said that the situation would only change if they felt that Stephanie was in immediate physical danger.
And the very next day, she gets pushed down the stairs.
The forensics checked the locks. No one forced it. None of the tenants buzzed anyone else in. And then there's the thing with the bin.
It just doesn't add up, Matty.
MIU Central Headquarters, Bow Street.
That's not the only bin in the flat. I emptied the others. I was going to do the kitchen one later.
But it just seems a bit odd that you would leave the kitchen bin, considering it was so full.
Especially given how clean your flat is. I mean, it looked to me like you could eat off the floor.
What is this? Someone throws me down the stairs and all you care about is what happened to my rubbish.
No, no, we just want to be sure of the facts, that's all, Stephanie. You see, in a case like this assault, for instance, it's very, very unusual for there to be no forensic evidence at all.
I don't know, maybe he was wearing gloves. Or maybe he wiped things after he touched them.
Maybe.
It sounds like you don't believe me.
Look, it's just that we know that Diaz Fraser told you she didn't have the resources to trace the emails. And that things would only change if you were seen to be more at risk.
So?
So I'm sure that you must have had patients in the past that have genuinely needed help. But have decided to exaggerate their symptoms so as they're taken more seriously.
You think that's what I'm doing? You think I'm exaggerating?
No, I think that you feel scared and isolated and like no one's doing anything to stop this man.
Because they're not. For 2 years, the police have done nothing. This man's tormented me with emails and phone calls, and now he wants to kill me, and still you won't help me.
But
Ronnie fixes Stephanie with a direct look.
Did he push you down the stairs?
Stephanie lowers her head as she weeps.
Was there actually an attacker?
The truth is, he's gonna kill me. I'm dead unless you help me, and you don't even believe I need help.
Matt sits back in his chair and looks exasperated.
You must see that we can't actually investigate a crime that hasn't happened.
Stephanie sits huddled in the gloomy light of the interview room and puts the fingers of one hand to her face as she weeps. Matt watches her, then glances from side to side. Ronnie, whose brow is heavily lined, studies Stephanie intently.
He's gonna kill me.
Matt looks to Ronnie, who shakes his head faintly and furrows his brow. Matt walks in a city street with Alicia.
I get that she was desperate, but that so wasn't the way to go.
You know we should charge her.
Yeah, I know, but she's got enough problems. And we've got enough on Dutton to charge him with wires, and with any luck, they'll end up linking him back to the original emails anyway.
Not a total waste of time, then. What happened to the other one?
Oh, Larry, yeah. He got out. Solicitor managed to get the sexual assault charges dismissed.
So he's back, spreading the love.
I guess so. I can introduce you if you like.
Yeah, I think I'll pass. Oh, actually, Matt, I'll need to get a copy of your report.
What, you want to check my homework?
It's for the hospital lawyers. Apparently they spent a lot of money on extra security because of Miss Blake. If she's lying, then they'd probably fire her.
Have you got her contact details?
I can email them.
Leave it with me.
In the police offices, Ronnie takes chopsticks out of paper and splits them.
Mmm, something smells like feet.
I'm broadening your culinary horizons. Welcome to the world of Korean cuisine. Look at that.
Ronnie lifts a crab claw with the chopsticks.
It's a claw.
That's an exotic delicacy.
Chandler.
I think you need to see this.
She hands Ronnie a document. He glances at it and passes it on.
Matt.
Matt studies the sheet of paper, then drops his head. Stephanie's covered in blood and spread-eagled on her bed with her head hanging back over the edge.
Stephanie Blake. Beaten and stabbed. Broken neck.
Ronnie and Matt look to a mobile on the bed.
On the phone?
Last thing she did was call 999.
Matt turns his head away sharply. Ronnie stares down at Stephanie.
It's Giovanni. It is the man in the kitchen. Oh, my God, he's coming in.
What does she mean, the man in the picture?
We showed her Larry's mugshot.
She couldn't mean Dutton.
No, she knows Dutton. She'd have used his name. Then anyway, he was in custody at the time.
Is this all we have?
It's him, James. Russell Lowry. We sent her home. 2 days later, he killed her.
Okay. Find me enough to charge him.
That will be a pleasure.
Okay, so let me get this straight. You are trying to connect me to a murder?
No. We're going to connect you to a murder.
Oh, really? Well, good luck with that.
Ronnie studies a CD from his collection.
As you can see, I'm a big fan of classical music, especially Mozart.
Ronnie's wearing latex gloves.
A lot of copies of Don Giovanni.
Well, you know how it is. Still trying to find that perfect one.
Lowry takes a copy from Ronnie, studies it, then hands it back. Alicia, George and James.
They found 25 different recordings of Mozart's Don Giovanni.
The unrepentant rake. Yeah, certainly appropriate.
Did they manage to track down his missing laptop?
Yeah, but the guy who bought it reconditioned them to sell on, so apparently it's no use.
Still no luck tracing the emails?
They've got someone working on it.
Like, am I the only one who's noticed the bloody great elephant in the room here? This guy Lowry was in Woodbury when these emails started. As far as I'm aware, not even Cat C prisons allow inmates online computers.
Why do you think we haven't charged him?
So who are the investigating officers?
Brooks and Devlin.
And how certain are they that Lowry is our man?
Well, they let him go, and a young woman got killed. They're certain.
Well, you're out on a limb here, James. I'm not sure that I would take that risk in your place.
Call it gut instinct, George.
So what are you and your gut planning to do?
Send them to Rotherham, see if they can work out how he did it.
Woodbury Prison, Rotherham.
Our philosophy is to give them practical skills and a sense of pride so they're able to play a part in society.
Nice theory.
It's a lot more than that. We have a fully functioning car repair shop and courses in joinery and metalwork, as well as further education and adult learning. Not to forget the very particular jewel in our crown.
A room full of prisoners working at computers.
A professional online marketing company and training facility.
And Lowry would have had access to this?
Good God, no. The guy was in for computer fraud. We're not completely insane. No, any prisoner who applies to come in here goes through an exhaustive vetting procedure. The competition's pretty fierce, I can tell you. Then, once they're in, all internet access is closely monitored. No, Lowry was in one of the workshops. There's no way he ever set foot in here.
The IT expert confirmed that the early emails originated from the prison's IP address.
But you can't narrow it down to the marketing company unless they agree to hand over their records.
So how was Lowry able to waltz in and out of this media place, let alone spend hours online without anyone noticing?
Lowry's cellmate, Keith Wilson, started on the training project a couple of months after Lowry got there. We think he must have been helping him. Yeah, I know, it's all still supposition. We're going through Lowry's history, but currently all we have that definitely links him to Stephanie Blake is the 999 call.
Animal rescue.
Alicia studies a document.
I beg your pardon?
In the 2 months before he was arrested for fraud, Lowry worked in a charity call centre raising money for an animal rescue organisation. During that time, Stephanie Blake set up a monthly direct debit to the same organisation. Guess who signed her up as a donor?
So they talked on the phone. Stephanie used to be friendly, outgoing. Lowry liked what he heard.
Not just that, it means he had her bank details, address, mobile number. The guy's a hacker.
Once he had those, he could find out anything about her.
Right down to what she bought with the points on her supermarket club card.
Don't you just love technology?
Legal visits room, Woodbury Prison.
Like I told the police, I've never heard of this Stephanie Blake. Why would I be emailing her?
We don't think you are.
With bearded Keith Wilson.
In fact, we're pretty sure it was your cellmate, Russell Lowry.
But we think you helped him. You got him into the media centre and you gave him your passcode.
No, no, wait. If I did something like that, I'd be thrown off the programme. That job's my ticket out of here. I won't risk it for Lowry. I didn't even like the blow.
And what was it, Mr. Wilson? Bribery or blackmail?
Trouble is, if you say you're the only one who ever used that computer, then that means you must have sent the emails for him. So you'll be charged with harassment and aiding and abetting murder.
What? You can't be serious.
You still convinced Lowry never touched your PC?
It was only meant to be the once.
At the CPS offices.
According to Wilson, Lowry helped him put together the presentation that got him into the training program.
So Wilson owed him a favor?
Yeah. Apparently Lowry told him he was into online dating.
That is one hell of a euphemism. So didn't anyone notice that he wasn't meant to be in there?
Oh, it gets better. The guy running the project had some kind of problem with his firewall. Wilson suggested Lowry might be able to fix it. Next thing you know, Lowry becomes unofficial IT support, and the governor's turning a blind eye because it's cheaper than bringing in a professional.
So Lowry comes and goes as he pleases. Mm-hmm.
And he's got access to the entire prison computer system.
Well, they're lucky all he did was send a few emails.
Mm, as far as I know.
Who's defending this?
Evelyn Wyndham.
No. God, queen of the early dismissal.
The victim, in a state of panic, is describing a man breaking into her flat. During the call, she identifies the intruder as Giovanni.
And you want to introduce this as identification of the defendant, Mr. Lowry?
Yes. Miss Blake had previously been shown Mr. Lowry's photograph because the police believed he was the Giovanni who was stalking her.
But you couldn't identify my client from the photograph. In fact, she said she'd never seen him before.
The point is, the police never told her the name of the man in the photograph. As far as she was concerned, he was Giovanni.
Spurious speculation?
No, informed reasoning. She only knew Lowry as Giovanni. So when she used that name to identify her murderer, it's as if she was saying, Russell Lowry is climbing in through my window.
Was she shown photos of any other suspects?
Only Russell Lowry.
So she briefly looked at a photograph, then in a state of high emotion, she saw a man who may or may not have resembled that photograph. Therefore, I maintain the prejudicial effect outweighs the probative value of the evidence.
Far from it. The key phrase here is high emotion. This is a classic example of res gestae. Faced with imminent death, there is no reason whatsoever to suspect that the victim was lying.
Except that she'd lied before. A week before she died, Miss Blake threw herself down the stairs and told the police that Giovanni did it.
There is no conclusive evidence that she fabricated the attack.
Except in their report, the police concluded that no crime had been committed, which I think clearly demonstrates that Miss Blake cannot be considered a reliable witness.
All right. My ruling is that the tape is admissible. But defense should apply to adduce evidence of the victim's bad character. Let's give the jury the full picture.
So, the tape's still in?
It is, but if Lowry's defense destroys Stephanie's credibility, it's as good as worthless.
Well, what about the other evidence? The original contact through the call center, the email harassment?
Well, the emails aren't really the problem. And we can prove he's the Giovanni who was stalking her online, but what we can't demonstrate is a pattern of escalation leading to murder. If the first attack had actually happened, things would be different, but as it stands...
He walks?
No, we'll get a conviction for cyber-stalking.
But not for murder?
Really unlikely, guys.
James hails a cab. MIU Central Headquarters, Bow Street.
I think she was lying on the tape.
Well, it's more that the defence can say that the ID is unreliable. It's difficult when there's no witness to cross-examine.
You mean because she's dead?
Matt and Ronnie sit solemnly.
So because he killed her, they can say what they like? They can tell people that my daughter was a liar. And that means her murderer will go free.
Well, he won't walk away from a stalking charge.
He destroyed her life. He made her afraid to step outside her own front door. Then she came to you for help, and he killed her. She never harmed anyone in her life. My daughter was not a liar!
Ronnie and Matt sit awkwardly as she weeps, with Chandler in a corridor.
He knew that we were onto him. That's what started the escalation. He wasn't controlling the game anymore. If we hadn't brought him in, she'd probably still be alive.
You didn't have enough evidence to hold him.
Because we were investigating the wrong crime. If she hadn't faked her own attack...
Well, are we sure that she did?
You can't change the facts, Ronnie, however much you may want to. It's clear from that report that you were both in no doubt that she had lied.
Well, that was then, this is now, Gov.
Oh, no. Don't even think about it.
But it wouldn't hurt if we went back over the evidence.
And then what? Decide you'd made a mistake? Allow a guilty conscience to affect your memory? You go down that route, Ronnie. And you not only destroy your own credibility, you undermine the whole of this department.
But if the alternative is just to let Lowry walk...
I don't want to hear it. Don't forget, Matt, it was your name on that report. You were the one who stated in no uncertain terms that Stephanie Blake faked the attack. You try and go back on that now, and I promise you that's the end of your career.
Matt lowers his eyes as Chandler fixes him with a stern look.
I don't hear very well, and I always worry that it might be one of the girls needing to get inside quickly.
Of course, yes. So you buzz them in just in case?
Yes.
Do you mind if I take a seat?
Oh, no, sit down, please.
Thank you very much, thank you. Mm.
So, what about the night that Stephanie Blake fell down the stairs? Maybe someone rang...
I was asleep. It was very late.
Yeah, of course, I understand. But what about earlier on in the evening, before you went to bed? Maybe someone rang...
Oh, would you have a biscuit?
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much. That's very kind, yeah. As I was saying, maybe someone rang the bell. You couldn't quite hear. You thought it was one of the other girls?
No, I don't think so.
But there might have been someone.
Yeah, there might have been. Yeah.
Well, that's good, isn't it? Thank you. The knife? Yeah.
Okay, just let me be quite clear about this. You decided to review your own investigation.
That's right.
And based on new evidence, you now believe Stephanie Blake was telling the truth about the attack?
Yes, I do.
He's at the CPS.
Ronnie, the defence have seen the report for the original investigation. They know you concluded that no crime had been committed.
I realise that.
Well, then you must also realise that doing this will undermine everything that you and your colleagues have done over the past 2 months.
Our interpretation of the evidence was flawed, and in light of subsequent events, I think.
Yeah, that's just my point. You've got to see the implications here. If police officers can start rewriting history with the benefit of hindsight...
In order to get a conviction.
Then what is to stop every investigating officer with a shaky case from going back pre-trial and just amending their reports?
Well, I can only look at the case in front of me, and in this particular case, I believe we made a mistake.
The defence won't just take your word for it.
Oh, they won't have to.
Look, I know how badly you want to put this guy away.
It's not about that.
Oh, come off it, Ronnie.
James, it's not about that. We interpreted the evidence based on what we thought we knew. We jumped to conclusions and we let her down.
Are you absolutely convinced you've got the evidence to back this up?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I'll apply to amend the indictment. We'll charge Lowry with attempted murder.
Ronnie smiles faintly and nods.
Thank you.
No, don't thank me yet.
Ronnie glances at Alicia, then carrying his coat over his arm, he gets up and goes.
Why is he doing this?
Because he believes it's the right thing to do.
But does he believe that Stephanie Blake was attacked?
That is not a question we need to ask.
You reckon?
Look, if Ronnie's new evidence contradicts his earlier conclusion, then we can re-establish Stephanie's credibility.
So we just accept that he's changed his mind?
He shows us the evidence, and the rest is his business.
Pre-trial review.
Stephanie Blake's landlady remembers letting someone into the building at around 7:30. She wasn't able to hear what the person said on the intercom because of her poor hearing, so she just assumed it was one of the other tenants. However, having spoken to all of the tenants, I now conclude that the unknown person must have been Stephanie Blake's attacker.
And why didn't the landlady mention this in her original statement?
Well, she hadn't realised the connection between that event and the attack, so she didn't realise its importance.
The original police report also cited the lack of forensic evidence at the scene. Surely that must still be an issue.
Well, there was no forensic evidence at the murder scene either. Nonetheless, Stephanie Blake was still dead. The attacker was cleverer than we thought.
Thank you.
James sits. Judge Quinn is on the bench.
Miss Windham.
She rises.
Well, my goodness, this is quite a turnaround.
As I said, new evidence came to light.
Yes, yes, which caused you to revise your conclusions. And it's just good luck. The revising those conclusions have seriously strengthened the prosecution's case against my client.
I'm sorry, was that a question?
Did you reopen the case before or after we'd applied to adduce evidence for Miss Blake's bad character?
After, but I fully intended going back over the investigation ever since the murder.
Of course you had. And I'm sure my learned friends for the Crown were extremely encouraging.
Choose your words with care, Miss Windham.
Oh, I intend to, my lord. Far be it from me to accuse the opposing counsel of suborning perjury.
She shares a look with Quinn.
D.S. Brooks, it wasn't just lack of evidence that made you think that Miss Blake had faked the attack, though, was it?
Well, sorry, I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, as I understand it, didn't her behavior acknowledge the fact that she'd made the whole thing up?
No.
Well, the Chris report said it did. When asked directly if there had been an attacker, Miss Blake burst into tears and failed to answer the questions.
Well, this was a young girl that was terrified, and there we were accusing her rather than helping her.
When you say we, do you mean your partner, D.S. Devlin?
Yes.
And he agrees with your revised conclusion?
As far as I know.
Does he agree or doesn't he, yes or no?
Well, of course he does. She didn't stalk and kill herself, did she?
What the hell were you thinking?
She asked me my opinion and I gave it to her.
No, you gave his opinion. So not only were you an inch away from perjury, now you want to drag your partner down with you too.
You could have warned me, Ron. I just thought it was best to leave you out of it.
Until you decided to drop him right in it.
Look, Gov, given new evidence, I just...
New evidence? Some old dear suddenly remembers she answered a buzzer?
I've got to admit, it's pretty tenuous.
Tenuous? That's the understatement of the year. I told you categorically to leave this alone.
I know.
If it were up to me, you'd be suspended by now. But I've been advised that it would further compromise the department if we were seen to be covering up a possible case of negligence. So consider yourself on gardening leave until the end of the trial.
Thank you.
Ronnie gets up and leaves Chandler's office.
Ron. Why didn't you tell me what you were doing?
There's no point the pair of us being on gardening leave, is there? Because you live in a flat.
So what? It's okay for you to throw your career away? To fall on your sword for the greater good, but not for me.
Matt, you're being overdramatic, son. All I did was go back over the evidence, that's all.
That's not evidence, mate. This is finding stuff that was never there. What did you say to the old girl, anyway? That this was all her fault, and this was her one chance to put it right?
You know me better than that.
Do I?
Yes, you do.
No, we could have gone back together. We could have found something on Lowry, but, you know, this is ridiculous. It makes us both look ridiculous.
Matt, I'll tell you what's ridiculous. A young girl standing on a landing, having a chat with a man who isn't even there, tries to garrote herself with her own necklace, screams her heart out, and
throws
herself
down
the stairs. That's
ridiculous. We both decided that Stephanie Blake faked that attack. You know that, and I know that. And now, thanks to you and your one-man crusade, Lowry is going to walk.
Well, I don't think so.
Well, I do. And I've been called as a witness for the defence. And no matter how much I want to see Lowry go down, I will not lie under oath, Ron.
Well, I wouldn't expect you to.
Ronnie nods agreement and walks off.
D.S. Devlin is standing by the original report.
Apparently.
I thought he agreed with D.S. Brooks.
So did we.
So what now?
John Abbott, one of the hospital lawyers, requested to see a copy of the police report after the first incident. They were going to fire Blake if she'd made it all up. D.S. Devlin told me to leave it with him.
And?
They didn't fire her.
George and James share a look. Old Bailey Robing Room, Central Criminal Court.
We're sure those were his exact words.
Abbott takes notes of everything. He basically gave me a transcript of the conversation.
Okay. Good.
James packs files.
James, are you sure about this?
Matt, who's wearing a smart suit, is sitting in the imposing hallway of the Old Bailey. He stares down at the black and white marble floor, then becomes aware of Alicia looking over at him as she stands with James, who's checking a file. She and James, wearing their robes and collars, move off into court. Matt looks pensive, then sighs deeply.
I refer the court to Exhibit 8, a printout of the original Chris report. Can you tell me what term you used to describe the conclusion of the investigation?
No crime.
Would it be correct to say that if no crime was committed, then Stephanie Blake must have faked the attack?
That's one interpretation.
I say it's the only interpretation, so I ask you again. When you filled out the report, was it your opinion that she faked the attack, yes or no?
Yes.
And you still stand by that report?
Yes, I do.
No further questions, my lord.
Wyndham looks smugly at Quinn, who nods faintly. Wyndham sits down, and James rises.
Dear Devlin, after the original investigation, were you satisfied with the conclusions in your report?
As far as I could be.
So you saw no need to re-examine the evidence?
Not at the time, no.
Whereas your partner, D.S. Brooks, became concerned that mistakes may have been made during the course of the investigation, mistakes that may have led you to reach an incorrect conclusion. Is that right?
D.S. Brooks wanted to go back over the original evidence just to make sure we hadn't missed anything.
But you yourself, you weren't involved in this process?
No.
You didn't re-interview the witnesses?
No.
You didn't compare the original crime scene report with that of Stephanie Blake's murder and cross-reference for similarities?
I was working on other cases.
So you'd already moved on because you felt entirely confident that you'd reached the right result?
No, the case was officially closed.
And yet, your partner, D.S. Brooks, an officer of considerably longer service and more experience than yourself, felt so concerned that he took it upon himself to single-handedly reopen the investigation. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yet you were still entirely confident. Dear Devlin, did your original investigation conclude that Stephanie Blake was being stalked by someone using the name Giovanni?
Yes.
And did you eventually conclude that Russell Lowry and Giovanni were the same person?
Yes, we did.
And did you also conclude that Miss Blake was in lethal and immediate danger from her stalker?
No, we couldn't.
So at what point did you reach that conclusion? When you saw Miss Blake lying dead of multiple stab wounds and a broken neck? By that point, I assume that even you, entirely confident as you were, must have realized you'd made a mistake.
During the initial investigation, we found no evidence that an attack had actually taken place. As far as we could tell, at that point, no crime had been committed.
So having concluded that no crime had been committed, you decided that Stephanie Blake faced no serious threat from Russell Lowry?
That's right.
And yet, you told her employers that she faced a serious threat from Giovanni, otherwise known as Russell Lowry. Did you not?
Alicia shifts uneasily as James asks the question.
Yeah, I did.
So did you lie?
Alicia rolls her eyes.
I felt sorry for her. I didn't think she should lose her job.
I'm sorry, D.S. Devlin. Was that a yes? You lied?
Yes.
And are you lying now?
No.
If you lied to Stephanie's employers to protect her job, perhaps you're lying now to disguise your own incompetence. Incompetence that you're too arrogant to admit, even in the face of new and compelling evidence.
Mr. Steele.
I'm simply curious about this witness's expedient attitude towards the truth, my lord. I have no further questions.
Matt averts his eyes from James's cold stare, glances over at Ronnie, then looks down, shamefaced. Alicia sets down files in the robing room.
You didn't have to go that far.
I went as far as I needed to.
Matt Devlin is a good police officer.
Not today. Today he was collateral damage.
Would the defendant please stand?
Lowry obeys.
Members of the jury, have you reached a verdict upon which you're all agreed?
Yes.
On the count of attempted murder, do you find the defendant, Russell Lowry, guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
And on the count of murder, do you find the defendant, Russell Lowry, guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
Stephanie's mum bursts into tears and nods as she weeps with another woman beside her. Matt looks at the floor, then gets up and leaves the courtroom. Ronnie, sitting in the gallery, glances over his shoulder at Matt as he leaves. Wyndham looks shell-shocked. Alicia gives James a grudging smile. Night. A fountain in Trafalgar Square plays in the background as Matt looks out glumly over a balustrade. Ronnie approaches and stands with him, staring out over the city.
He was pretty rough on you in there, wasn't he?
You think?
Makes you glad he's on our side, though, eh?
You put me in an impossible position, Ronnie. And then you stood by while Steele called me a bad copper. Worse than that, a stupid copper.
I never set out to make you look stupid, Matt, you know that.
Well, that was just an added bonus, was it?
What? Every cloud, eh?
They slide each other a sideways look.
Too soon?
Matt stares ahead. Ronnie, too, stares out into the night. The characters and events in this film are entirely fictitious. ITFC audio description.